much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Whoa, yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. My guest and I were just chatting about that song before we went on the air. It's 50 years old. What? Anyway, I want to welcome to KDWA Cindy Thury-Smith. She is the curator of the Hastings Pioneer Room, and she is here today to tell us about a really cool display that's going on. What is it called? It's a challenge, a quilt challenge. She's also a quilter, and I'm anxious to learn more about it. Good to see you.
Nice to see you too, Mo. I'm talking today about a special display of small quilts, and it's on display at the Dakota County Historical Society in South St. Paul. It's being sponsored by the Dakota County Star Quilters, and it's 36 small quilts that are celebrating the 100th anniversary of the women's suffrage movement. In 1920 was the first time women were allowed to vote. And that was with the passage of the 19th Amendment, which had to go to 36 states to be ratified. And we've had 100 years of voting, and we're celebrating it.
Are these the 36 states that you got the quilts from then?
No, we actually sent out an email inviting 450 quilt guilds across the country to send in these 24-inch square quilts. And we have 36 quilts from 17 states. And they are mounted on black felt banners, and they're hanging on the wall, and they are very striking.
And so they are going to be there through the month of March?
They're there till April 3rd.
Oh, nice. So how did this idea come about?
It actually started the day after the 2016 election, which, as you know, was the first election that had a woman candidate from a major political party, Hillary Clinton. And during that day of election, thousands of women were visiting the graves of Susan B. Anthony and Carrie Chapman, other women suffrage leaders, and they were sticking their I Voted stickers on their graves. And you can Google this and see some wonderful pictures. The very next day, one of the groundskeepers from Lakeside Cemetery came to us, and he said there was a note stuck on this grave in one of the older parts of the cemetery at Lakeside, and it was an I Voted sticker, and the note said she was a suffragette. And the name of the grave, name on the grave was Maria Van Hosen. And the other two volunteer researchers and I at the Pioneer Room, we had never known that there was any kind of particular suffrage history in Hastings. So we started to research. And what we found was in September 1881, at a women's Christian temperance meeting held at the First Presbyterian Church right there on Vermilion Street, the Minnesota Woman Suffrage Association was formed in Hastings, and of the 14 original founders, three of them were women from Hastings. So we were all excited about this. And
isn't that something that you didn't know about that
from
the history? Because you know so much. So it was something that people didn't feel was important enough to save as history.
As a matter of fact, the following week, the newspaper in Hastings, after this had been formed, the Minnesota Women's Suffrage Association had been formed, the paper said, oh, there was a meeting at the Women's Christian Temperance Union last week, but there are too many other things to tell about, and so they didn't say anything.
Oh my gosh.
It was just, ugh. But after we did some more researching, we found out that the first election that was held after the 19th Amendment went into effect across the country, the very first election that was held in South St. Paul, Dakota County, Minnesota. And there were 90 women who lined up to vote. And because the election judges didn't know what to do, they were all men, who knows, maybe these would all be thrown out, they kept their ballots separate. So we even know the names of some of them. So the first women to vote after the 19th Amendment went into effect were Minnesota women in South St. Paul in a municipal election.
And they kept their votes separate?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Cindy, you and I have both worked at election as an election judge. Can you imagine if we did that today?
Oh, we'd be strung up. Oh, my gosh. But anyway, so I thought this was very interesting history, and so I approached the Dakota County Star Quilters that I knew every year had a month-long quilt show at DCHS, Dakota County Historical Society, and I know they do a guild challenge. And so I approached them early in 2019 and said, would you like to do a challenge on small suffrage quilts? And they were very interested, and they wanted to open it up to quilters across the country, and that's how we got the ball rolling.
So what is a small suffrage quilt? What exactly does that mean?
They're 24 inches square, and they were open to any American quilter. It had to be the American suffrage movement, though. And there's a lot of information out there that's confusing between the American suffrage movement and the British suffrage movement, because the Americans relied very heavily on the British suffragettes to tell them about strategy and publicity and things like that. So a lot of times they're mixed up. So we made a point of saying, has to be the American suffrage movement, can be what's going on in your, what's going on in your state. If you wanted to commemorate a particular event in your state's history. And we had very few rules because we wanted to encourage a lot of variety and techniques and different looks in the quilts. I think we only had a couple of rules. One of them was no glitter. Glitter and quilts don't work well together.
Okay.
And then they did have to be 24 inches square so they could be easily hung and easily shipped and, you know, easy to handle. Plus, all the guidelines went out on July 1st, 2019, and we had to have a picture of it by January 1st, 2020. So they only had 6 months. Got to keep it a reasonable size.
So what exactly did you get? And just a vast variety?
It's surprising what we got, because we thought they were all going to be, you know, kind of old-fashioned, traditional-looking, but your listeners can't see this, but I've got a catalog of them here, and we've got everything from there was a Susan B. Anthony stamp that was created in 1936. It was a three-cent stamp. Somebody made a replica of the Susan B. Anthony stamp.
How clever is that?
Yep. And then there's another one that is a replica of the cover of the, it was the Women's Suffrage Procession, which is the first large organized march on Washington, D.C. for political purposes. And they did a program, and that's a replica of the program. And then we've got ones where they've got folded women's suffrage banners on them. There's one that's called the Perfect 36, because Tennessee was the 36th state that ratified the 19th Amendment. And so she has, it's a pattern called Tennessee Rose, and she's got 36 of them on there. I did two of them. One of them was on ratification of the 19th Amendment, and it talks about when the various states ratified. And some of them ratified real early in, like, 1920.
Minnesota.
Yeah, Minnesota was, I believe, the 15th. But when do you think the last state ratified the 19th Amendment?
To give women the right to vote?
Yeah.
Boy, I don't know.
It was Mississippi, and I believe was 1974.
No.
Yep, yep.
You couldn't vote if you were a woman in Mississippi before?
No, you could, but they didn't vote it in. The other states did, and it became national law. There were a whole bunch of southern states that did not ratify it. They voted real early, and they all turned it down because our suffrage amendment says the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. That's all it says. Sex. You can't do it. So the southern states were concerned. Black men already had the vote. Now all of a sudden there'll be a whole bunch of black women voters, and if they voted together in a block, so they did not want black women to vote, so they got together right early, denied it, and then they had to come back later and vote on it again because it was already a national law. But, you know, there were some states that were dragged kicking and screaming.
Isn't that hard to believe?
It's just, oh. And then the second one I made, after I got that one done, I thought, I wonder when other countries had the right to vote. So I made a second one that was called, When Did Women Get the Right to Vote? The first country was New Zealand in 1893, followed by Australia. And then you get to 1972, and that's Switzerland, which is a European state, you know, well-developed. And the last one was 2011, which was Saudi Arabia. And so I thought, well, then, you know, you see the march of progress going on. But then I made the mistake of Googling what percentage of women vote in various countries. And there were well over a dozen countries where the female participation in the vote, even if it's legal on the law, is less than 5%. Now, why would you think that would be?
Tell me why.
Because they get either harassed on the way to the polling place, at the polling place, on the way home, or their husbands make it clear that they better not vote. So even though the law's on the books, it's, you know, obviously the fight is not over.
What are some of those countries where that percentage is super low?
It's the Middle Eastern countries.
Saudi Arabia. And
I can't remember exactly which ones they were, but I was not surprised when I saw the list.
So this was a really great turnout if you got 36 from around the United States. When did they start coming in?
They had to send us a picture on January 1st, and then we notified them that if they were accepted, and they started mailing them to the Pioneer Room. They had to be there by February 15th. It was like Christmas.
I was going to say, I bet it was.
Every day I'd get packages, and there'd be wonderful things inside.
Oh, how special. So tell us about the quilts themselves are obviously very different. What about the quilting techniques?
We have everything. We've got several crazy quilts that were sent in.
And what's that, please?
Crazy quilts are very random piecing, and they're usually embellished with a lot of embroidery and lettering and whatnot. And then there were some that were very, very starkly modern, very minimalist. Surprisingly, there was even a landscape one, and it was a picture of the forest with shafts of sunlight coming through, and she titled hers The Light of Truth, the light shining in the forest. There were some that were strictly traditional piecework ones.
Sure.
And there were a lot of kind of pictorial ones with images of famous suffragettes. And there were a lot of them that were talking about the future, about how, you know, we need to vote now to make things better for our children. Because that was one of the driving philosophies behind the women's suffrage movement, is they wanted child labor laws passed, they wanted food safety laws passed, and they were not getting passed. And they felt they needed to step in and make the world safer for their families and their children and get some of these things done.
So the suffrage movement started when, do you think, across the country?
1848 was the Seneca Falls Convention, when they wrote out a list of what their reasonings were and what they hoped to get done. And it pretty much continued on from that until the 19th Amendment was passed. And then you have this huge national organization. What are you going to do with this huge national organization? You want to keep the momentum going? They morphed into the League of Women Voters, which their philosophy is to educate. We're not going to say this candidate is better than that. We're going to educate on the issues and what can be done and what can't be done. And they are still continuing to this day.
This display is going to be at the Lausche Museum?
Yes.
In South St. Paul. Mm-hmm. Until April 3rd. Is there a fee to go to the museum?
Yes, there is. For this particular exhibit and the larger quilt show, it's a $5 entrance fee. The Dakota County Star Quilters, and I believe that this year they've got several quilts in from the Hastings Quilters, are also in the big main kind of a ballroom. And then the suffrage quilts are all along one wall behind glass.
Is quilting something that is a dying art, or is there a resurgence? Because it seems like I know more quilters than I did 10 years ago.
There was a big resurgence during the bicentennial, and then there was a big resurgence about 7-8 years ago with what's called the modern quilting movement, which is a a style of quilting that is much more minimalized, not quite so time-consuming. There's a lot of young people who are entering quilting because they like the modern quilting look rather than the real old traditional. So I would say it's not dying. It is a hobby that takes time, and like any other hobby, it can cost a lot of money or a little bit of money, however much you want to put into it. The lecture I attended today was talking about women's movements, and surprisingly, there was not an emphasis on quilting in the women's suffrage movement. The Christian Temperance Union, the Women's Christian Temperance Movement, and the abolitionist movement, they used women's quilting to raise a lot of money for their cause. But the women's suffrage movement did not.
Did they get their money?
They got their monies by donations and by from their members. They did not emphasize quilting and women's handwork because they considered that a symbol of women's oppression. You know, being kept at home, having to do all this sewing, and so they did not emphasize it at all. As a matter of fact, Susan B. Anthony had some pretty pithy words about how she never wanted to do that. She didn't want to sew, and she didn't want to wash dishes. I can understand that last one.
Cindy, the people that were behind the original organizers in Minnesota, do you think they told their significant others, their spouses, that they were going to a different kind of meeting, or do you think they said they were going to these suffrages meetings?
There were a lot of them that had very supportive spouses.
Oh, good.
And I was kind of surprised, because when you think of it, you're going to pass a law you're trying to pass a law in 1905, 1910, and whatnot. Who are you going to have to go to get it brought up in the House or
men.
The Senate? Men. There were a lot of men that helped the women's suffrage movement. And there was only one quilt that had anything about any of the supporting men in it, and that was my quilt.
Oh, nice.
Yep, because there were men that from the very beginning, I think it was George Francis Train, he was kind of an entrepreneur and a businessman and very wealthy. He started one of the original suffrage newspapers, which, of course, help publicize. And there were men all along the way that helped, because you had to go through the men in the various state legislatures and in the national legislature. So there were men that were helping, and there were wealthy people of both genders that were helping.
Well, it really is so fascinating to look back at history, and what a great way to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the suffrages movement. We want to thank our guest today, Cindy Thury Smith. She is here as a quilter, but she also is the curator of the Hastings Pioneer Room. And don't miss out on the Suffrage Small Quilt Challenge. It's all displayed at the Lashy Museum in West St. Paul through the 3rd of April. Great to see you, Cindy. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep